guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Greenway moves in. Centers it, score! Carson to Brodin, a drive. It was wide, they score! In the middle, Erickson at the tip. Kaprizov hit the post, they score! Loose puck out front, Erickson up, scores! Zuccarello moving in to Kaprizov, he scores! Kaprizov in, he scores! And there's the hat trick!
Production from their big boys, got some big saves from Marc-Andre.
Wave
Get the
it.
Flag.
It's about winning towel. I got the towel.
It's about hard work and habit. No, it's not.
No,
it's about bleeping winning.
The towels are back.
You damn right it's about winning.
That got put away.
I need to hear it.
Here it is.
I need to hear it. I need to hear it straight from the man.
Listen, you guys know what this is all about, right? Right? What's it all about? Spurgy? That. This is about winning.
There it is. All righty.
We are back.
Big win last night. You know what? In fact, it's time for a wardrobe change.
What's happening?
Oh, we're taking the North Stars hat off. We're putting the wild hat
That's
on.
A wild
Look at this
hat.
Guy right
How many
here.
Times has Judd wore a wild hat in his life?
Got first this
time,
last night.
First
got
time
this
I've
last
ever,
night.
Is that
it
a trucker
free.
Hat? Wait, you got a koozie and a trucker hat last night?
I got a trucker hat. I got a koozie.
Turn your head to the
towel.
Turn your head to the side.
Let's see.
Which side?
Oh, look at the shield. The NHL shield on the side. That's a pretty cool hat.
That's a nice hat. I like that hat.
Nice hat, dude. Look at it. I mean, it takes a lot to get Judd from basically burying this team after game one to then turning in his North Stars hat for a wild hat and koozie after game two. What a turnaround. Who had a bigger turnaround? The Wild themselves or Judd Zolgad's take on the series? That's
bandwagon. The bandwagon. I'm back on it, baby. Woo! We're taking off. All right.
Judd chasing the bandwagon around the neighborhood like I was chasing our 3-year-old new adopted dog around the neighborhood yesterday. It's great. 20 minutes of Judd chasing, 20 minutes of old Mackinac chasing.
All right.
The Hockey Whisperer was watching intently last night with a drink in hand.
Naturally.
And you guys have the full recap. You can find the Judd's Hockey Show Ventline Edition on the Mackie and Judd podcast feed, Score North YouTube channel, et cetera, et cetera. But the Hockey Whisperer has brought six observations for you guys here. And you can sort of correct him if you would like to, but these are six observations from the Hockey Whisperer. Starting with this one. If Kirill Kaprizov continues to be that active, I don't expect the results to... The hat trick is great, but he's not going to get a hat trick. And you might get another hat trick at some point. But, like, it's the activity. It's the process that the Hockey Whisperer loves about Kaprizov. And, you know, in the NBA, they've got the assist-to-turnover ratio, right? Chris Paul's very good at that. He's very good at being efficient and setting up his teammates and not turning them over. Kaprizov last night, forget about the hat trick, he had 8 shot attempts, 0 giveaways, and was an absolute just puck hog in a good way, keeping the puck away from Blues players. If he's going to continue to be that active and that efficient, the Wild are going to win the series and they're going to make a run. He's the best player on the ice in this series, and he's going to be one of the best players on the ice in any series that they play. So he was very high on Kirill Kaprizov's huge performance last night.
I'd actually make the argument, which is pretty impressive, that I think Joel Eriksson Ek was actually the best player on the ice last night for the Wild. Offensively and defensively, you know, Kirill was able to come through, gets the hat trick on the empty netter. That's great. But to be honest, that line still has not clicked. Like, Hartman is, I thought, was a mess yesterday. Zuccarello has been kind of not a detriment, but a little unnoticeable. But this is what your superstar players can do, right? When that line isn't clicking, Kirill can still kind of carry things and get big-time goals. And yes, you needed to see your superstar player rise up in a playoff game, and he was able to do that yesterday.
Can I give you, though, Phil, to your point, one, like, snapshot
Phil or the Whisperer? Which one are you talking about?
Yeah, who are you talking
about? Whisperer. I'm sorry.
Phil's over here concocting D'Angelo Russell trades. So
Phil's
I can get him if you want.
Phil's dog is running around. We can't find the
dog. You know,
dog.
I found the more that you chase and run after your dog, the more that they just keep running away from you.
Yeah. Right, but you have to.
Same applies to women as well. You got to be careful.
That's true. You got to play cool.
Yeah.
You got to play cool.
That took a turn. That took a big turn. I just wanted to whisper. I would just like to back up your point, though, with a play last night, that the difference from not only game one, but for you Wolves fans, the difference from the Wolves as well, okay? So, like, this is what your best players do when your best players are doing the right things. Because it's one thing to be ultra-talented. It's another to combine that talent with a calm, smart decision, right? The second goal of the night, last night, at 11:47 of the third period for Kaprizov. It's 4-2. And we talked about this on the late night Judd's hockey show last night. A lot of us were like, oh, it's going to be 4-3 soon. Blues are buzzing. Blues are really good. They're buzzing, right? And it's like, this is where it happens. Minnesota sports, they're going to make it 4-3. Now they're going to pull their goaltender. It's going to be 4-4. Perron, who had the hat trick on Monday night, has the puck in the Wild zone. Kaprizov calmly picks his pocket, takes it away. Unlike Monday night, though, he doesn't try and take the puck end-to-end in the big rush. He passes to Zuccarello. Zuccarello skates it out. Kaprizov comes with him. Now it's a two-on-one.
Pominville?
Stop. Don't. No. No more of that. No more of those guys. Give me new names. And then Zuccarello on the two-on-one feeds Kirill, and he scores a gorgeous goal. But, like, that's the 180 from, like, D'Lo heaving up a stupid shot, right? Like, because Kaprizov could have tried to be the super, I'm going to be a puck hog. Mm-hmm. He wasn't. So, like, that to me is such a telltale sign of, like, the difference in smarts between game one and game two. And that's where a star player can really, I think, show that he is engaged and he's making the right decision.
Yeah.
I think my favorite part, too, about the little... LaPanta isms is now our Wild fans on Ventline are joining us in doing that. We had about 5 to 6 different fans that came on, and we're also doing the same thing. So that this is catching on. This is not just Mackie.
People
and
wonder,
production.
Like, why do you guys just shout out random names? I think, I don't know, it was several years ago we realized, and LaPanta is not the only one that does this. Pretty much all hockey play by play guys, not named Doc Emmerich, just call out the player's name as the puck cycles around, right? So it's just. And sorry for ruining this for you going forward, but hockey play-by-play is just a series of shouting out names.
It's difficult.
Spurgeon over to Dumba. Dumba cycles it into so-and-so. So-and-so over to so-and-so. Like, it's just... And the radio, too, is even... Like, radio, you have to do it.
Yeah.
So, anyhow. The second observation from the Hockey Whisperer, and Declan kind of hijacked this one, which is fine. Eriksson Ek was one of the most effective players on the ice last night. He's one of the busiest players on the ice. And the productivity obviously showed up with 2 goals, an assist, and a team lead. Depending on the sites you look at, ESPN had him with 2 hits. A couple of the analytics sites had him with 5 hits. But either way, he's not elite at anything in particular necessarily, but he's just very active. He's just a good, solid grinder hockey player is what the Hockey Whisperer observes.
And guys like that who have a bit of a clutch gene, which Ek has, they elevate in the playoffs. Their style of play translates better to now. Like, they're good in January, they're fine. But in a game like last night, because he's got some skill, but he works his ass off. And when you combine those two things, and he probably takes his game up just a notch, right? Eriksson Ek is the type of player every team that's going to make a playoff run needs, because they go from being a reliable, really good player to being sort of like a clutch player, because that first goal, which, by the way, changed the entire game. Whisperer, it changed the entire game. The Wild was playing terrible for 9:22 or what. Before that goal was scored, they didn't have a shot. They couldn't pass. They looked lost. Bortuzzo, the Blues defenseman, his stick blows up. Greenway picks up the puck and feeds Ek. But you know what? That goal was scored from a greasy place where you get your butt knocked. Like, you can get your block knocked off. But Eriksson Ek was right there. Eriksson Ek is the type of player that you really, really need, because I would argue he's more productive in May than probably November.
Yeah. Well, you've actually segued perfectly into the third Hockey Whisperer observation here, which is that the Wild clearly made a point coming off game one to crash the net, especially on the power play early in the game. Well, the first 10 minutes were kind of a disaster, but like once they figured things out,
yes.
You know, they had, there was the, now the Whisperer does feel like Fiala may have gotten screwed out of a goal and that Phil Mackey may have gotten screwed as a result out of a home run parlay. So hopefully they go back and look at that thing. Fiala definitely got a stick on that puck. I don't know why they reversed that. Back to the Hockey Whisperer. That was a great example of, okay, it's muddy, it's noisy in front of the net. So Kaprizov, Fiala, and Ek was Ek the third guy in that mix. They're all in there poking and jamming and you know what? When you poke and you jam and the puck might get covered, that's when, like you said, you can get your block knocked off. You can't care. You're going to have to score a goal or two like that in these games if you want to win. And so crashing the net and just being active was
my
led
towel,
to a greasy goal. Is great.
My towel says it's about winning, not it's about Fiala being credited with a goal.
Yeah, unless you're trying to win, write that down points.
Yeah, I also had
a parlay.
My friends at Underdog Fantasy, also ruined my pick'em parlay because that was taken away. So actually, I have two of the three members of the show got that screwed over. And by the way, that's the second most important thing outside of winning is those things happening. So just want to clear the air.
Yeah, is it possible they could overturn that today and right the wrong?
I got bad news, you guys.
They won't.
Yeah. I saw that replay as well. I think Huso hit the puck before Fiala did. So if it crossed the line at that point, it is Kaprizov's goal.
So it went Kaprizov off Huso's skate or whatever.
Huso went back to try and get it out, and he jammed at the puck accidentally, and I think it crossed the line. And then Fiala hit it in the net. That's no longer a goal for Kevin Fiala.
Okay.
Another perfect I'm sorry segue. You guys were inconvenienced by what was a great night, Whisperer. A great night.
Well, listen, when you've got stakes on Underdog Fantasy and you also have stakes on Write That Down, you want goals to be scored a particular way.
Yeah.
Okay.
My team didn't help me either.
Okay, you've segued again into an observation here.
That's what I do.
Huso is who we thought he was.
My man.
Okay. And I don't want to denigrate a guy who had a really good regular season. This was his first full season as a regular starting goalie in the NHL. And he had a nice little shutout in game one, and that's great. But he's not Dominic Hasek. He's not Jonathan Quick. He's not Jean-Sebastien Giguère from 2003. You can score on this guy. You can score on this guy.
Absolutely. Huh? Yes, absolutely. And you know what? He played great in game one, deserves full credit for that. But as the old Mike Tyson line goes, everybody has a plan until they get punched.
That's right.
He gave up that goal. That building exploded. I will continue to say this. For any problems I have with some of the fan base here sometimes being too positive and not being realistic, these fans in the playoffs bring it. That building last night, and Huso sucks. And you know what? This guy, second playoff game ever, it impacted him.
Yeah, like I wasn't in love with the tempo of that chant.
It's not a good name.
I don't like well, no, his name's fine because it's two syllables. I don't like making sucks two syllables.
Right. No, but
it should just be a Huso sucks. Huso sucks.
But Crawford,
and they did the two syllables on the sucks.
You know? I liked Crawford because the sing song was so
Crawford.
Good. Right?
Crawford.
Exactly.
Also, we also do Wild. When we do Let's Go Wild, is Wild. Let's Go Wild. It's Wild. Why are we...
Let's Go Wild.
Yes.
But it's weird the other way, too. Let's Go Wild. Let's Go Wild.
As I get my camera back on. But yes,
Let's Go North Stars.
Yeah.
See, that fits.
Yeah, North Stars.
That rolls right off
the
tongue.
Don't start with me. Don't get me on. I'm being positive today about the Wild.
All right. Observation number five from the Hockey Whisperer. And you might... I don't know. You guys might take issue with this one, but... Marc-Andre Fleury played well last night, but the blue line deserves even more credit, and let me tell you why. The Blues were credited with 46 shot attempts last night, okay? 42 of the 46 shot attempts were classified as low danger. 20 of the 46 shot attempts were blocked by Wild players. So sacrificing their bodies, ushering the play into low danger areas. And so in the end, Marc-Andre Fleury only had to face four non-danger shot attempts or non-low-danger shot attempts in that game. So credit to the blue line for stepping up compared to game one. And credit to Marc-Andre Fleury for, you know, coming back and playing a good game and doing what he had to do as well. But 20 blocked shots and 42 low-danger attempts? I mean, whew. You want to talk about a breezy night at the office for Marc-Andre Fleury. There you go.
I wouldn't call it breezy. He definitely made some good saves. But, Phil, oh, I'm sorry, Whisperer, you're so right. Part of what bothered me about the whole Monday game one, well, the Wild played pretty well. Look at the advanced metrics. I mean, come on, the Wild played pretty well. You got to admit, they played pretty well. In their own zone, they were terrible.
Is that how Jerry Seinfeld rants about the Wild?
The Wild, they're terrible.
What's the deal with all the high danger side attempts?
What's up with Marc-Andre Fleury?
Why all the rebounds? What's wrong? So the Wild on Monday in Game One, though, was in their own zone, irresponsible, pathetic at times, drove me crazy. And Fleury gave up juicy rebounds, but no one was there to clear them. And here's the thing too: Marc-Andre Fleury and rebounds ain't a new thing. Mm-mm. Like, it's not like, well, he always swallowed the puck up before, and tonight he has rebound problems. So I thought Dex last night was the Whisperer's point. I thought last night was the perfect marriage of goaltender and defenseman. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you need. Rebound comes out, it's juicy, but guess what somebody does? They box out. Like, this is no different than basketball too. It's boxing out. It's doing the work in the paint in basketball, right? And if you don't get rebounds in basketball, you're in trouble. Well, if your defensemen and back checkers don't get to clear the puck and get it out of the zone in hockey, you're in trouble. So I give Fleury a lot of credit. I think it was a nice bounce back game, Declan. But I also think that the Whisperer is exactly right. The defenseman played a far superior game.
Yeah, I don't think Marc-Andre Fleury's game changed that much between games one and two. And you're going to look at the box score and say, what are you talking about? He allowed 5 goals in game one, and he obviously was a lot better in game two. No, Dean Evason literally said in the availability going into game two, and Wild fans on Twitter are ripping him, that our defense has to clean up those rebounds. And well, Marc-Andre Fleury's got to swallow up those pucks more. Marc-Andre Fleury's going to be Marc-Andre Fleury. And yes, there's some give and take there. You can't be giving up fat ones and just putting them right on the blind side for someone like Shen to bank it on the back door. But the Wild's defense has to do it its job as well. It was the same Marc-Andre Fleury, for, in my opinion, between games one and two.
Yeah, so he's going to start game three now. I mean, there's no reason. Yeah. He's the guy now. So yeah. unless he has a couple. I think if he has a couple back-to-back, like 4 or 5 goal situations, then they might, you know, we'll see what happens. And then observation number six is a little bit, I don't want it all to be just sunshine, roses. Listen, this is a series here. Okay, this is probably going 6 or 7 games. And so the last observation is a reminder going forward. The Wild are still taking too many penalties. That was one of the biggest keys going into the series, right, which is just keep it 5-on-5 as much as you can, or keep it 5-on-5, or keep it so that you have the one-man advantage.
Yes.
They took 8 penalties last night, 17 in the series so far through 2 games. It's just a little too much. I don't need to see St. Louis on the power play for 10, 12-plus minutes per night when they are that good on special teams. So
there's a couple things at work here, though. One is, I think it could be statistically quantified. It appears that the National Hockey League has put out a mandate early across the board to call things. Like, they're calling, it feels to me like in dipping into the 4 games on Tuesday as well, we're seeing a lot called, which I think is trying to set the tone for don't pull crap. In game one, what was frustrating to watch was the Wild allowed themselves to get frustrated and took retaliatory, and that's the thing that we talked about. The retaliatory penalty, where you could take 2 guys, but instead to send a message, you take 1 guy. And if it's from your team, that's a problem. What I saw last night was, with the way things are being called, they're going to take penalties. But what they didn't do last night, and it was largely because they led the entire game, was they didn't take retaliatory dumb penalties. I think it was in the second period. The whistle blew. There was sort of a scrum. A Blues player tried to engage Hartman, who the Blues clearly see, rightfully so, as a potential hothead. He batted the guy away and skated away. And so that's the thing. You can't take those penalties. The Blues want you to. If you're going to get called for a hook, or something. It's going to happen right now. I think we're going to see those as these series continue. I think we're going to see less called there too. And guess what? Your penalty has to be good. Like, you can't just say, "Oh, well, special teams have struggled." Like, okay, that's fine. Then your playoff run is done. So what we saw last night from the Wild crashing the net on the power play, and I believe the Blues on the power play themselves, after going 2 of 6 in game one, were 1 of 5. You need to do a better job. They did last night.
Speaking of Blues trying to bait the Wild into certain things, so I think it was in the third period, and the game was pretty much decided by this point. I think it was 6-2 at the time. And a Blues player took kind of a run at Tyson Jost, and it was a legal hit. It was like Jost had the puck in front of the net, and he fired a shot, and at the same time he gets cleaned out. Just gets absolutely. It was a good, clean, hard hit, but it was a hard hit. And Jost gets up, and there's a scuffle in front of the net, and I don't remember which Blues player it was, but and I'm going to replace the word that he actually used. I'm going to replace a letter. Let's say he called him a wussy. But it was a P instead of a W. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And you could see, so Blues player was calling Jost after leveling him a wussy. You're a wussy. And Jost just gets up and starts laughing at him. Yeah. I'm a wussy. You Lord. Think I'm a wussy? And it wasn't. Lord. Yeah, it wasn't him getting Spurgeon. I'm going to break an ankle. It was, dude. I'm a wussy. We're beating your ass right now, and you're taking cheap shots in front of the net. And he just kind of laughed at him. And I love that reaction from Jost.
But here's my thing. Do that or just skate away when you're behind, too.
Yeah.
Don't get drawn into this crap. That's what they want. That's exactly what they want. And if you take a penalty, now you're an idiot.
Yep. So there you go. Those are the 6 Hockey Whisper observations.
Wow. Again.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.
Whisper!
Yes. And I'll tell you, listen, some people have doubted the Hockey Whisperer's ability to still see things clairvoyantly in the future, because the Hockey Whisperer was born predicting correctly a game seven double overtime winner, specifically by Nino Niederreiter. He said it would be a double overtime game and that Nino Niederreiter would win. This is now going back like 8 years. And so that's, it's hard to live up to that.
Yeah.
Last night, the Whisperer told you game two Wild win, Kaprizov at least 2 points, Fiala with a goal. I think his radar was pretty honed. Got screwed by the official scorer guy and would like to find some contact
information.
I'll
talk to Barry Fritz for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barry?
All right.
Come on.
Barry.
Come on, Barry.
Barry, what are you doing?
Bear's my guy, man. I don't know what Bear's.
Help me out.
What's he doing, man?
Come on. What are you doing?
Anyhow. All right. Speaking of being honed, it's time for Old Tweets Exposed before we get to Doogie and some Reckless Speculation Thursday. Declan goes into the archives, over a decade of just embarrassing tweets from all three of us here. What do you got for us this week?
I'm going to self-report to start here. Some wild playoff takes and hockey takes from us three.
Oh, boy.
All right, let's go to old Dex tweets. In April 25th, 2017, after the Wild were bounced by the Blues in 5, quote, "If the series went 5 and we only gave up 10 goals, I would take our chances." And me doubling down from Chuck Fletcher's statement, silencing the morons. I apparently
who are the
was,
morons?
Because the Wilds, the morons, as in, I was probably taking the Wild bait that they should have won that series, and Fletcher was pointing out that hey, the way we played was okay to win, but they didn't win any of those games because they weren't peppering any high danger shots on Jake Allen. So I was trying to think. Basically, echo so that we got robbed, and I'm championing the GM's statement on the game.
You're basically trying to hang a banner for losing in 5 games,
correct?
But we totally should have won a couple more games. Hang the banner.
You were mad at me because I said that was a bunch of garbage.
4 retweets, 8 likes. All right,
4 retweets. Can we see who retweeted?
Let's see.
Oh, I bet I know who they are.
Did Chuck Fletcher retweet it?
No.
Did the Wild official account retweet this?
Oh, yeah, we got some.
Oh, look at your
people.
Little blogger buddies on here.
Yep, blogger buddies. Yep, that's what I thought. That's exactly who I thought. Declan's right. That Zolgad sucks.
Oh, God. He does.
Amazing. Amazing. Right. Okay. That's Declan calling people morons for being mad about losing in 5 and not scoring goals at all.
I'm very exposable, so I'm going to keep quiet on this.
All right, let's go to Phil now. Speaking of Chuck Fletcher takes. February 27th, 2017, was thinking today on 1500 ESPN. Chuck Fletcher is a fan's dream for a GM. Splashy. Yeah. aggressive, stockpiles young talent, etc.
You know, I stand by this take. He is, you know, he is not always correct with his splashy, aggressive, and stockpiling of young talent.
I'm glad he's in Philly.
Yeah.
But he, so did he have to, did he fire Mike Yeo here too? So this is the second time he's fired Mike Yeo?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Amazing. I'll put that conversation yesterday, 2 days ago. Listen, Mike, got to fire you again, buddy. Sorry. Hopefully you and your family will find a place
keep
to land
breaking
your feet.
Up. They get back together, they break up.
Okay. I don't
know. This time.
That might have beat Declan. We'll see what Judd has in store.
All right, let's go back to 2014 for Judd Zolgad with a Marc-Andre Fleury take. Marc-Andre Fleury is being asked to make some tough saves tonight. No surprise he isn't making them. This is on the Penguins executives.
He was awful.
Wow,
back.
Dude.
He hit a playoff cold stretch where he couldn't stop a beach ball.
But this is one of the great goalies of our generation, and you're just dogging him here.
He was, I think this is Matt Murray replacing him. Is that right?
Probably. Yeah, probably. This is the Matt Murray time, yeah.
Yeah, he went through a stretch where he was not playable in the playoffs, and it's remarkable how he bounced back.
And you're ripping the Penguins executives who ended up winning, like, two more Stanley Cups after you tweeted this.
Didn't they win a Stanley Cup that year?
They won in,
because
I think,
they switched goalies. They switched goalies. This was probably early in the playoffs.
They went back-to-back, right? So they went 16-17, I think.
All right, so they won it the next year.
15-16, that's what it was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think Fleury didn't he not play in the playoff runs too much that year?
One of those he didn't. He split time with Murray in the other one.
But anyway, now in retrospect, I probably ripped Billy Guerin there. I ripped the Flower.
You did.
This is Old Tweets Exposed, and I have been exposed.
Okay. I don't know who takes the cake here. Is it Judd ripping a Hall of Fame goalie and a future Wild GM? Is it me putting Chuck Fletcher on a
dream.
Mount Rushmore of GMs?
Yeah.
Is it
Declan?
This might be a wash, you guys.
Three-way tie here.
This might be just a flat-out wash.
First ever three-way tie.
It's the Spider-Man pointing meme. All three of us are just pointing at each other. It's you. It's you.
Yep. Hey, if you're a business owner out there and you're looking to protect your Twitter account from risky tweets, well, Federated might not be able to help you, but they can help foresee risk on the horizon with over 100 years of experience in helping businesses maximize their success. They're one of us. They're based in Owatonna. They are big supporters of Minnesota sports teams throughout the city. So check them out if you're a business owner and you're looking to take your business to the next level. Federatedinsurance.com, where it's our business to protect yours. All right, we're going to pause Doogie with a scoop session when we come back on Mackie and Judd.
I think guys now have a feel that have played in the playoffs. The excitement, the fans, you know, the competition, all that stuff has whet their appetite to the point where they want more of it. But it's, to your point, it's not going to just happen. We're going to have expectations, but we had always expected to be in the playoffs all season long. We talked about it a lot in film and in practice and what it would take to be there. Those were internal expectations. The external ones are ones that can oftentimes be more of an anchor.
Reckless speculation.
Chris Finch just sort of reflecting on a good Wolf season. This is Reckless Speculation Thursday to all who celebrate. Mackie, Judd, executive producer Declan, and our insider friend from the Five Eyewitness News Sports Department and the Scoop Podcast, Darren Doogie Wolfson.
Reckless Speculation.
What's up, dudes?
My favorite of the week. Who cares that it's Cinco de Mayo? Way more importantly, happy Reckless Speculation Thursday.
Exactly. And listen, you can still throw back a tequila. You know, go get some
I did last night.
Some tacos down the street, whatever you got to do.
That's the lifestyle.
Yeah, got to live it.
Mix
so
early,
so
it.
You actually just got done with an interview with Gupta. And I don't know, let's start with some Timberwolves stuff here. We did a full episode. I know you guys have talked Timberwolves on the bonus scoop earlier this week. Yesterday, we went through three key offseason things the Timberwolves have to deal with. Number one, would you trade D'Lo? Number two, do you give Karl Anthony Towns a supermax? And then number three, how good can Anthony Edwards become in a year or 3 years from now? But, you know, where as they sort through how to go from, okay, we finally made the playoffs. This is great. We're a 46-win team. But now we're looking up at all these other teams, and we got to at some point become more of a 55-60 win team that aspires to go deeper in the playoffs, and some decisions have to be made this offseason. So let's start with Gupta. Is he going to be making the decisions, do you think?
Well, he'll certainly have the chance to win over the decision makers. His relationship, Phil, with Glenn Taylor has evolved solidly. I'm telling you, I'm not making this up. If I had asked Glenn Taylor this time last year, Cinco de Mayo of May 2021, hey, Glenn, tell me what you know about Sachin Gupta, I think I would have gotten a blank stare. I truly believe that. At the time, Sachin was number two in the front office. Amazing. I'm not convinced. Now, others, sure, they knew of Sachin, but Glenn specifically, I'm just telling you, I'm not convinced Glenn had any working knowledge of who Sachin Gupta was a year ago. Now, he certainly does. Mark Lurie, Alex Rodriguez certainly have a working relationship with him. We heard, that was a great soundbite that you played, Declan, from Chris Finch on Saturday, but also on Saturday, Chris Finch, almost unprompted, went to bat big time for Sachin, alluding to the idea that this partnership needs to continue. And let me remind everybody, it was in large part Mark Lurie, Alex Rodriguez, who drove the bus on the Chris Finch extension, right? So you think about how Chris, Mark, and Alex are aligned. So those two are going to listen to Chris on a lot of fronts. The only thing that makes me pause a little bit is going back to September, there was legit Elton Brand steam, the number two guy in Philadelphia, legit Landry Field steam, the number two in Atlanta. Maybe he's number three, but he's in the Atlanta Hawks front office. That I do think there's legitimacy to Mark and Alex specifically liking those two guys. So I think it is going to be a legitimate search, but Sachin is going to be a big part of that search. He will be given every opportunity to win this job on a full-time basis. Elevate, really. Remember, he never was given any sort of interim title. He just, this whole year, retained that VP title, but had final decision-making power. But he certainly will have every opportunity to elevate to president of operations. But nothing is promised.
So let's explore this path then, because I think it's a very important question of, if you get a new Pro Bowl or you keep Sachin, who's going to pay him? So the simple question is this. If they're going to do a search, like if Mark and Alex say, Glenn, we want to do a search, we're very impressed by people, Elton Brand's a big name, would they somehow try and make those two pay Elton Brand? Because as long as Glenn's there, I think if Glenn writes the check, I think the reality is Glenn's probably going to stay status quo because he loves comfort, and he probably doesn't have to pay Sachin nearly as much as he would a new president of basketball ops. So what's the feeling about how this could play out? And if Mark and Alex really do take on a big role here, could they be stuck with the check and told, okay, that's fine, but you're going to have to pay them. I'm not going to do that.
Well, I mean, certainly. I mean, looking at the Finch negotiations, just to use that as a reference point, I'm telling you, that was in large part Mark and Alex, because the timeline remains the same. Now, I still think this could change at some point, but right now, as we sit here on May 5th of 2022, the plan is for Mark and Alex, December of 2023, so in about, what, 16, 17-ish months, to take over as majority owners. Whoever the president of operations is going to be, you know, unless it's a Paul Fenton type situation, that individual is going to be in place for a while, right? Will be in place when Mark and Alex are the majority owners. But right now, clearly, Glenn Taylor is the majority owner. Glenn Taylor will have a big say. He'll have the final say in who the president of operations is. But clearly, Mark, Alex, Glenn are going to have to work in lockstep on that. I'm with you. Glenn has been incredibly loyal to a fault going back many, many years. And yes, he can save some money by hiring Sachin. Elton Brand would cost a lot more money. To me, the question, Judd, is also, would Sachin have any interest in staying with that VP title? Would he stay as the number two? Because there's so many strengths there. Like, I don't think you want to lose Sachin Gupta. And remember, Sacramento wanted to hire him. He's paid his dues. Detroit, Philly, Houston. He is ready to be a president of operations. The only thing he's lacking, really, is that dynamic personality. But how often do a lot of presidents of operations meet the media across the league? Yes, most often guys do something at the end of the season. Just about every president of operations did something to wrap up the season. You probably do something maybe pre-trade deadline because there's so many media requests. You do something post-trade deadline, especially if there was some action. But otherwise, and I suppose media day or sometime during training camp, but otherwise, it's not like the president of operations is front and center all that often. So even though he's lacking that dynamic personality, is that big of a deal for a guy that has absolutely paid his dues? And I just don't sense that there's a strong interest there in staying as the number two. He does love it here. His wife delivers babies here in town. She absolutely loves it here. But hey, she could go deliver babies in another city. That's a job that translates to other cities. I have a hard time believing that he would accept, after having this 1 year being the final decision maker, that sort of power, that he would then say, okay, go ahead, bring in Elton Brand, but I'll retain my VP title. I'll come back as the number two. Also, I did check, not necessarily in my 30 minutes with him today, but checked with some others on his contractual situation. So originally, he was set to have an expiring contract this summer. When Gerson got let go and Sutchin was given this newfound power, same title, but newfound power, there was some sort of adjustment made. So I was told it's not black and white. I still have to dig more on the terms, how his contract is written. But I was told point blank by multiple people, the contract is not black and white. There's a lot of gray area to his contract.
Yeah, I think even if he does, let's say they hire Elton Brand or something to be the president of basketball. Yeah, okay, we'd love to keep you. We'll give you another raise to be the second guy in line. But it's just a matter of time. If he's destined to be a Pobo, it's just a matter of time until he leaves. So, you know, maybe the best case scenario is you can keep him for one more year. I have a question, speaking of contracts. So D'Lo just had a nightmare series against Memphis going into an offseason where, you know, not only are the Timberwolves trying to figure out what to do with him contractually with 1 year left, but the entire league is looking at him too. At this point, he's, you know, 7-8 years into the league or whatever he is, and he's been with a bunch of different teams. So what do you think his value is? There's no way I give him a max extension. And even if he were to take a discount, I'm just kind of at the point where there's certain guys, Doogie, that can get you from, you know, 25 wins to 40 plus wins. Stephon Marbury was that guy for the Timberwolves 25 years ago. But then there's certain hard decisions you have to make if you want to go from like 40, 45 wins to 55, 60. And I think he's one of those hard decisions. You thank him for helping get to, you know, to the playoffs, and there are some great things that he did. Is that a valuable expiring contract in a trade? Like, could what could you do with him with 1 year left on the deal? You know, would you have to attach a first round pick? Some team, I think, is going to look at that as a valuable expiring contract and maybe a reclamation project. What do you think?
Yes, you can trade him without attaching, for example, the number 19 pick in the June draft. That expiring contract absolutely can be moved. But do I think there's a bunch of teams knocking down the door to acquire D'Angelo Russell?
No.
They are aware of his warts. They look at it and say, fourth team in 7 years. Okay, that's a red flag. Okay, let's look at the playoff series against Memphis. Okay, he stunk. Now, he was good in the play-in game. He was good for about the first, 55, 60 games of the season. Mm-hmm. He was their best clutch player. He does deserve kudos for the way he played for a large part of the regular season. Then he disappeared about the final, 12 to 16-ish, 18-ish games. You can't give him the extension. And I'm just telling you, Phil, I'm with you. But, like, if Sutchin is making the decision whether to extend D'Angelo Russell, I will be shocked. Not a lot shocks me anymore in the world of sports doing this long enough. I will be shocked, especially the money D'Lo wants. So he's eligible for an extension that can pay him in the vicinity of $40 million a year.
No.
I'm telling you, Sachin Gupta is not doing that. I'm sorry, he's not.
What's that,
Bill? No. I'd have a hard time believing Elton Brand would do that.
That's a no for me, dog.
Fields would do that. Like, no right-minded president of operations is giving D'Angelo Russell the money he wants. I brought this up with Judd on Tuesday, Phil. Let's say, I have a hard time believing this because D'Angelo Russell's agent, Aaron, big-timer with Creative Arts Agency, like, I just don't think Aaron Mintz is taking, you know, some sort of team-friendly contract or a low-ball type offer. But Like, if he was willing to come back at 3 years around about the money he's making right now, maybe a little less, like $26, $27 million a year, like, would you bring D'Lo back at 3 years, $78 million? Not that he's taking that.
Man.
But that's the hypothetical I threw out to Judd. And I'm not even sure he would take that. I'm not even sure the Wolves would want him back.
I think the problem I have is, you know, when you brought him in, you brought him in to be the Robin to Cat's Batman, and those two guys were going to sort of, you know, be the face of the Timberwolves and take all the clutch shots and everything. And then a little thing called Anthony Edwards happened, and Anthony Edwards is just very much ready to be the guy here. And I, you know, personality wise, the way he rose up in the playoffs at times, I think the dynamic has changed so much. I need a point guard that their first thought is to facilitate the success of Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns. And their second thought is, if I'm open in a spot where I need to take a shot, cool, I'll take a shot. And I think even D'Lo would tell you he's in the score first, shoot first point guard bin. Stephon Marbury was in that bin. I don't love the small, offensive minded, inefficient point guards if your aspiration is to go to 55 or 60 wins. I need someone who's either going to be more efficient as a scorer. I need either a better offensive version of D'Angelo Russell, which Anthony Edwards kind of is. I mean, he's just a bigger, more superstar version. Or I need someone, this is going to sound crazy to some fans, but Tyus Jones is a better player now than he was 2 years ago. I don't know that he's like a 30 minutes, 40 minutes a game starting caliber player, but I think a guy with his mindset of I'm going to facilitate first, play some defense, and then if I get open for three, awesome. I don't know that D'Lo fits. I don't know that I almost feel like the pecking order doesn't work for what he wants to do on a basketball court. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Like, it's hard to get out of my mind. Game five, after the Wolves choke but still have a chance late, clock ticking down, 24, 23, 22, D'Lo, dribble, dribble, dribble. Hadn't been good all game. Takes that horrible shot. Misses it badly. Like, yeah. I can't get that game five vision out of my mind. You're right. Tyus Jones would be an unbelievable fit. Like, he leads the NBA in assist-to-turnover ratio, so he doesn't turn the ball over, keeps the ball moving. Now,
he's an advanced metric guy, man. Like, his advanced metrics shine, even if his, you know, scoring doesn't necessarily.
Big time. Now, I can tell you, Memphis absolutely wants to keep him. I am curious to see what Detroit does at the point guard position. I've actually thought about Detroit for a potential D'Angelo Russell home. They are going to do something at the point guard position, so... You know, is it as simple as Jalen Brunson? Maybe. The Dallas point guard is a free agent. So,
dude, that would be – how would you do – it would be a sign and trade. Be a sign and trade. Jalen Brunson's number one on my list. But, I mean, he's going to – you can't just sign him because you don't have any cap space.
His dad's history here, I don't see Jalen Brunson coming here. That's just me.
Yeah.
Remember, his dad was here under Tibbs.
Yeah.
And there was some stuff there. I don't see Jalen Brunson – necessarily landing here, but he's a really, really good player. My buddy Sean Sweeney is Jason Kidd's number one assistant. I mean, he just speaks glowingly about Jalen when I've caught up with Sean. And so, yeah, I don't know if Dallas can retain him, even though Mark Cuban, it doesn't matter. He'll pay whatever the luxury tax is. But, like, that's going to be a really hard one for Dallas to keep just based on role and the way Luka plays. So, you know, maybe Brunson ends up in Detroit. But Detroit is going to do something at the point guard position. But if not Jalen, you know, I've thought about maybe Tyus there. I think the Knicks could use a point guard. They have some cap space, but, you know, Tibbs is there. Heck, Gerson is there. Remember, Gerson decided not to match the Memphis offer sheet.
Dude, D'Lo is a perfect Nick. He's a perfect Nick. You've crystallized it. D'Lo's Marbury. He's Marbury.
Yeah, well, on the Knicks, yeah, I mean, I'm saying I don't see Tyus there. As long as Gerson is there, yes, on D'Angelo there. Like, the biggest fan in the world of D'Angelo Russell is Gerson Rosas.
Yeah.
There's not a bigger D'Angelo Russell fan. So if I'm Sutchin or Elton Brand or whomever it is, the first phone call I'm making is to Leon Rose in New York and circulate it, somehow trickle it down to Gerson so Gerson can, you know, somehow convince Leon. They have that creative agency connection.
Hey, Gerson.
Like, convince the Knicks to make a move on D'Angelo Russell. Like, yeah, that absolutely has to be the first phone call. The other thing they could do, Phil, just play this thing out that you hope that D'Angelo, you know, plays more like he did the first 55, 60 games next year, that the Wolves, if they want, one summer from now, summer of 2023, can have a good amount of cap space, like legit cap space. And I haven't looked ahead to see what the free agent class of the summer of 2023 looks like, but I imagine there's going to be some pretty good players in that class that you could play this thing out. You don't exercise the team option for that following year on Malik Beasley. So Malik Beasley essentially is an expiring contract. D'Angelo Russell is an expiring contract. So you could, if you wanted to, do something along those lines.
You know who's a free agent?
Roll this thing back through.
LeBron.
You hope that you can maintain your health. The Wolves were incredibly healthy this year. And roll this thing back, even re-sign Torian Prince. There is some interest there, although my sense is Prince has a little bit more interest in returning than maybe the Wolves have in him returning. That's a situation I keep an eye on. But, you know, depending on the price point, there will be some dialogue there about re-signing their biggest name free agent, Torian Prince. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to, you could look at rolling this thing back, figuring Anthony Edwards is that much better next year. Jaden McDaniels is that much better next year. You know, you do some stuff on the outer edges, like go find Jalen Noel a better home, but maybe you can get something for Jalen Noel. He deserves to play more than he has here. You know, so you can do some things. You know, you need to bring in some interior help, but that number 19 pick, if you could get the Duke center Williams or even the Auburn center Kessler, like that rookie, one of those rookies could help you immediately next year for a few minutes, rebounding and shot blocking. You've got those 3 second-round picks that you can do some stuff with. There's a little bit of a roster crunch, but like I'm just saying, if Gupta wanted to or if Brand wants to or whomever it is, they just want to kind of run this thing back. I don't know if like that's the worst idea. Like this is a very tight-knit group. It's weird to say that because there's been so many drama-filled Wolves rosters, but this particular group is pretty darn tight, as aloof as D'Lo is. He's a unique personality, but like for the most part, this roster really, really gets along. They like each other, right? So you could make a case. Now, hey, Kawhi Leonard, healthy next year. Are the Lakers really going to be this bad again? I don't buy the Stephen A. Smith. It's more his opinion, but like I don't see the Lakers trading LeBron James. So I think the Lakers find a way, bring in a shooter, bring in, you know, somebody on a vet minimum contract that can help in the interior. You know, hopefully Anthony Davis stays healthy, LeBron stays healthy. You know, maybe the Lakers run things back. I don't know if there's, you know, much better ideas, and the Lakers should be better. You know, maybe they look at Frank Vogel as the scapegoat, bringing a new coach that they're going to jump up. San Antonio has cap space this summer. What do they do with that cap space? I'm not sure. New Orleans should be better next year. They were a playoff team this year. I think they'll be better next year. You know, but like, does Utah drop off? You know, what do they do with Gobert, Donovan Mitchell? Like, can Utah run things back? But Denver's going to be better next year. Jamal Murray will be back. Michael Porter Jr. will be back. So, like, the Western Conference isn't slowing down. When you think about, okay, now they have to find a way to jump up from 7 to 4, right? You look at the landscape of the playoffs right now, both conferences, it's the top 4 seeds that have moved on. Now, we can debate how important home court advantage is. Heck, the Wolves won game 1 in Memphis. But I do think there is some importance to being a top 4 seed in your conference in terms of making a legit run, you know, to playing multiple playoff series. But I'm just saying, I could make a case for just running this whole thing back.
I guess just to put the bow, too, on the point guard conversation, Dukes, as it is reckless speculation on a Thursday here.
Reckless speculation!
It just seems like they could get by with a point guard rotation of whether it's Tyus Jones if they brought him in, Pat Bev, Jordan McLaughlin. Obviously, I know Balmaro's still probably a step away from making contributing minutes, but just like to basically parse out all those point guard minutes, if you're to move on from D'Angelo, I don't think those three, I think those three guys can replace those minutes and the value with even better value than what D'Lo was able to provide this last season.
I really like McLaughlin, Declan. I really do. That was actually a good get by, I don't want to give him credit, he's a different dude, but Brian Pauga, who used to be in the Wolves front office under Layden and Tibbs, he's the one who was single-handedly, for the most part, responsible for Jordan McLaughlin landing with the Wolves. J-Mac can play. Like, I'd love to see J-Mac get 28 to 32 minutes. Ooh. You know, then maybe you bring in, you know, some other guard. I haven't looked at all the free agent point guards, but you know, bring in somebody else. Yeah, you move D'Lo. Maybe you bring back interior help. I mean, that's to me, Phil, Declan, Judd, that's like some team will say, okay, we'll take D'Lo, his expiring contract. We'll give you this player who's got 2 years left or 3 years left, right? So the Wolves are taking back more money. Now, that would screw up the idea, you know, one potential plan of having this cap space summer of 2023. But then that goes back to, like, are free agents, like, yearning to come to Minnesota?
No.
They're working on that. They hired Marquise Watts behind the scenes. They're trying to figure out ways to make this more of an enjoyable experience for players, the player experience side of things. But I still don't think a lot of players are, you know, knocking down the door to come to Minnesota. Now, money ultimately talks for a lot of these guys, but like maybe that's the trade you make. You move D'Lo for, you know, a power forward. I still think you can bring Jared Vanderbilt off the bench. So you can find a starting power forward that's got 2 or 3 years left on his contract. And that team says, yeah, we just don't want to pay this guy for 3 more years or 2 more years. We'll take expiring D'Lo. So those are the types of scenarios I personally would look at.
Duke's off the court. News came out today, which I think caught a lot of people by surprise. Dave Benz has been removed as the team's television play-by-play voice. We don't have a replacement yet, but sounds like, according to the reporting by Johnny Krasinski of The Athletic, they informed Benz yesterday that his contract was not going to be, I think there was an option, renewed. What can you tell us about that, and what do you think about my theory that the first person who's going to be offered the opportunity to replace Dave Benz is Marnie Gellner, who has stepped in for Benz before? And keep in mind, too, we just got done with the Sixers and Bucks had females in the TV play-by-play spots there, and I think they both did well. Gellner does a good job. I think that there's a good chance that we're going to see a transition here to the first female play-by-play voice in Twin City sports.
Would not surprise me one bit. And that would have to do with this decision being made more than anything. It's not like Dave Benz did anything wrong. Not necessarily my favorite play-by-play announcer, but you know what? Pretty darn popular, you know, and I think a lot of people can be good next to Jim Pete, but there's a certain relationship you need to have with your color guy, with your analyst, right? And I think, you know, Dave deserves credit for that Jim Pete has become just about the best analyst in the game, certainly on a local level. Mm-hmm. Right. So I love Jim Pete. So I think Dave deserves credit for, you know, some of Jim's development. But yeah, I think you're, put it this way, Judd, I think you're very much on to something. I mean, they think the world of Alan Horton, who does a phenomenal job on the radio side of things. Alan would be fully capable of transitioning radio to TV. But like, do you really let go Dave Benz, Caucasian male, to hire a Caucasian male? Yeah, I struggle to see that one. So yeah. Going in a different direction like Marnie, who's fully capable, love Marnie, you know, and she's front and center. She does a great job, you know, with, you know, being, you know, omnipresent, right? I mean, heck, she was in our building not that long ago, filling in on Twin Cities Live. You know, we know she's on a local morning show that's pretty popular on a regular basis. So, yeah, in terms of promoting the team, getting the word out, and, you know, getting some headlines with a progressive move like that, wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Interesting. Doogie, give us the update on Miguel Sano. So he's undergoing, do we know, is he undergoing the short-term meniscus repair or the long-term meniscus repair?
I was told he should be back before the month of June, at least, you know, swinging the bat, you know, whether that's in St. Paul or down in Fort Myers, but like he's not going to be still on crutches, able to do nothing like on June 27th. So, you know, is that the short-term? I suppose. I can tell you he's in, well, the Yankees team physician's doing the surgery. I guess I didn't check if maybe that physician flew in here, but
oh, if I trust,
I imagine he's probably in New York City.
I would have gone. Yeah, just on principle alone, I would have gone with a different team's head physician, I think.
Just what Miguel needs, trip to New York.
Dr. Chris Ahmad is his name. World-renowned. He's doing the surgery. The surgery by now, 1:30 New York time. We're talking here at 12:30
Dr.
Central.
Aaron Judge will be performing the surgery.
Aaron Boone.
Probably done by now. But, like, the question is, Phil, once he's back, you know, let's say he's back by June 25th or, you know, June 30th, what the heck is his role? Like, you know, Kirilloff can play first. Miranda can play first. Like,
yeah.
You know, Sano's not going to be here next year. Like, I think we're all figuring that. They're going to pay the buyout before exercising.
Careful. You'll wind up in the bad takes Hall of Fame. Be careful.
You know,
the stands are coming for you, Darren. The stands are coming.
And hey, the decision they made at the time, I was fine with it. Like, I wouldn't have re-signed CJ Krohn to then let go Sano. Like, at the time, the information we had at that moment, I thought it was a pretty easy decision. You choose Sano, you move on from CJ Krohn. Credit to Krohn for, you know, having the great year, this great start with the Rockies. But I'm just saying, at the time, like, I don't think it was a real tough decision. But
I mean, there was one show.
It's not a tough decision. You're not going to have Sano back next year.
No, there was one show in town that after his hot season said, you should trade him while his value is high. This would be a mistake. I don't know what show that was, but it was some show. Some show. I don't
Interesting.
Know, whatever
you know what, though? When you say value is high, just like D'Lo. So who the heck was exactly trading for Sano?
To me, it wouldn't matter because he's not. I didn't believe that he was going to be a regular contributing. I mean, Doogie, he's been worth like 8 wins above replacement in 7 years. He's one of the most people get mesmerized because he hits 30 home runs once in a while. Okay, this is the most home run friendly the league has ever been the last 5 years. He doesn't do anything else. They literally signed him as a shortstop a decade ago, and he's devolved into a below average first baseman. He has to lose 30 pounds every year and a half because he gets out of shape. It's like, I'm not.
Although he's in pretty good shape right now. Like, I don't have a problem with the shape he's in right now. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he's very replaceable, right? I mean, you can find that defense for sure at first base. Yeah, I mean, he'll draw some walks. But, yeah, I mean, you said it, Phil. I mean, incredibly replaceable. Bottom line, I'm just telling you, like, there's no chance the Twins are exercising that option for 2023. So if he comes back, you know, sometime in the summer, middle of the season – like, what exactly is his role? Like, I can't really figure out what the heck it would be. I mean, they need a righty bat, I suppose. So, I guess in the lineup here and there against some lefty pitching. But outside of that, like, I don't see him playing regularly.
No, I think you're right. All right, rapid fire scoops. Anything Vikings related from you?
Yeah, well, they signed a kicker out of Oklahoma who's got one heck of a leg, Gabe Berkich, to a multi-year deal. I'm waiting on a text on the money. I'm more curious on the money, not necessarily the term. But they are bringing in some competition for Greg Joseph. Chris Reed, the free agent offensive lineman addition from the Colts, Minnesota State Mankato. Look for him to get some action at center during training camp. That nothing has been promised to Garrett Bradbury. Now, you know, we'll know the schedule, what, 1 week from today, May 12th. So we will know where the Vikings open up week one, whether it's at U.S. Bank Stadium or on the road, who the opponent is. Hey, Garrett Bradbury, that game, that second Sunday in September, or if they open up on Monday night, whatever it is, Garrett Bradbury could be the Vikings starting center. Like, he can win that job, but he has not been promised that job. So look for Chris Reed minimum. Maybe there's more, but Chris Reed minimum to get a look at center. Ed Ingram, their offensive line pick, what, second round, late second round from LSU. As of now, he has not been told that he'll compete at center. I wonder, I think he got some center looks down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. I think there's a better chance they look at him as somebody who could play some swing tackle if need be. So he can play left guard, right guard, Ingram can, but you know, maybe they also give him a look at swing tackle.
Interesting. All right. There it is. Happy Reckless Speculation Thursday. Reckless Inside information about your favorite Minnesota sports teams with Darren Doogie Wolfson.
Can I leave you with a little Gopher basketball steam? Men's basketball steam. I was with Ben Johnson this morning. He's got multiple open scholarships remaining. He's not using all those scholarships. It's one of those deals, like, you can't play more than 10 guys, so what's the point in having 13 scholarship players? You know, then you're pissing kids off. Are you making some promises about playing time? Then you don't follow through on that playing time. But he is going to add at least one more player from the transfer portal. Right now, arriving on campus, Dartmouth transfer guard Taurus Samuels.
Okay.
Maybe more so a point guard based on size, but can play off the ball. So that's what he's looking for more than anything. Kerwin Walton Jr., not in the Gophers mix. Josiah Strong was once in the Gophers mix, no longer in the Gophers mix. Also Jones, the sharpshooter from Woodbury High School, he's in the portal after a nice run at Davidson. He is not in the Gophers mix.
All right. There he is. Darren Doogie Wolfson.
Awesome, dude. Thank you.
Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
His first name is Mike. Mike Jones from Woodbury. Good kid.
Enjoy your Cinco de Mayo. Go down to the street to Teresa's maybe tonight.
Get a little Teresa's, little California burrito. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, sign me up. That cheese sauce. Oh, yeah. I love it. I'm off this.
Talk dirty to me. Yes.
Yeah. I was on the duck plans for 28 days. I'm clear of that now. I'm with you. I'm all about Teresa's. Good idea. See you, boys.
All right. Later, see you, Doogie. All right. There he is. By the way, that scoop session was presented by our friends at Aquaside. Declan, Aquaside.
Yeah. If you own a lake home or maybe you have a pond on your property, you need to call my friends at Aquaside. They've been helping people maintain nice lake shores for over 60 years, and they have a complete line of lake and pond control products that will take care of anything from weeds to algae. Finally, it's warm out here, okay? We have 65 sunny. I was in t-shirts. I put some sunscreen on yesterday, okay? Which means I'm going to be in the water here soon enough, and you need to make sure that your lake home or cabin is free of those weeds, and they've been killing weeds for over 60 years. They're a local company, too. They're in White Bear Lake. Go check them out, aquaside.com.
Boom. All right. A juicy scoop session there. I'm not sure if we solved anything with the Wolves there, but very interesting that they're going to be still looking at the Elton Brands of the world and considering Gupta. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what happens with old D'Lo and the Timberwolves play-by-play spot on Bally.
A lot up in the air. Phil, I think you should call Bally Sports North. And I think that we should tomorrow audition you for this job.
I mean, listen, I am who's got two thumbs and has nothing but great things to say about the Timberwolves. But Phil, didn't you call Carl Anthony Towns a clown 6 times? I was hacked. I was hacked.
That wasn't me.
My podcast
was hacked.
What you
were trying to say was it was like Tears of a Clown.
Tears of a Clown. Yes, it was clownish behavior by everyone else for ripping Carl Anthony Towns.
So you're improving already. I think you could have a future here. You and Jim Pete.
Coming around, yeah. Oh, Jim Pete's my guy, man. Jim Pete's my guy.
I'm not with Jim Pete.
You should see Jim Pete and I on a golf course. You want to see chemistry? It's chemistry right there.
Okay.
I'm throwing it out there.
That's right. I have golfed with Jim Peterson. That's what I'm trying to tell you guys.
Coming up next on Bally Sports North, Phil Mackey and Jim Pete take to the links.
Who's got two thumbs and likes to name drop? Right here. This guy.
I think we should audition you for the job.
Okay. We'll put some tape together. We'll send it in. See what happens. All right, that's a wrap. Mackey and Judd, happy Reckless Speculation Thursday to all who celebrate. We'll see you guys tomorrow.